This is an example of speech.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blow hard, evergreen topical heat wave of a weekly conversation turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, music, literature, social media, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comments section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. You can email us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Elbro. You can contact me on Twitter at Bloated Nemesis, and I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at green_weird, which is WYRD. This episode, we have a special guest, Jacob Green. He is a working professional musician. He now lives in Vermont, but hails from Wisconsin. He joined Charles in studio WYRD. You can find him on most social media and music platforms, or simply on www.jacobgreenmusic.com. The conversation touches on his goals and motivations, politics and music, and the three of us discuss Michelle Wolf, the potential war in Iran, and the silver lining of presidential dick pics. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think. Now, for some Jacob Green. Tell Me What to Think. We have a special episode here. We have a guest with us. His name is Jacob Green. Jacob, would you like to introduce yourself? Like, what's
Yes, my name's Jacob Green, as you mentioned. I'm originally from here in Beloit. I primarily make a living as a one-man band, but I also reunite and join with old bands any chance I get.
Oh, sweet.
Currently living in Vermont.
Yeah, how's it out there?
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's green. A little colder.
Really? You don't talk to many people who say that about Wisconsin.
Well, it's kind of like similar to, living in Green Bay or Sturgeon Bay. You know, it's just a little bit colder than it is down here.
Yeah. Okay. How would you describe your music?
I suppose just, in the last kind of 5 to 6 years, it's been more roots, acoustic-based, folk, Americana, bluegrass, blues type stuff. But it kind of started more electric and rock, you know.
Okay.
Went back to the roots.
Did you start doing more roots music as you played as a solo performer more?
No, kind of. The funny thing is, in 2010, I started with this band, and we had a full drummer. I had an amp, a couple effects, and we had a violin and a percussionist. No bassist. But we came back after this tour from Minnesota, and my van got stolen in Milwaukee. And all those, like my pedals, amp, all that stuff was in it.
Jesus.
So literally since then, I purchased a new acoustic guitar, and I've been acoustic ever since.
like serendipitous.
And we got a great song out of it about that. So
yeah.
To me, that's kind of somewhat worth it.
Right? Yeah. That's awesome.
I had to start my, I got my van back 3 days later. I had to start it with a spoon for like 3 years. They ripped out the ignition. So.
Oh, wow.
Why not a fork?
Well, I mean, it could be either end. You're not usually the actual end you eat with, you know.
Yeah,
I think it was a screwdriver at one point. But my washboard player, he played with spoons, so that's, you know, I had spoons on hand.
Yeah.
But I actually just started kind of getting back into my band here in Beloit, The Grit, or Jacob Green and The Grit. We were always more electric, and so yeah, I've been kind of tapping back into the electric rock and blues thing, which I love too.
Are there some songs that you would do acoustically that work well in that format, or?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the majority of my blues-based stuff I do as a one-man band can easily be translated into a full, like, electric band.
Cool.
Some of them are even written that way with the band in mind, but yeah. It's not a hard transition, you know. My drummer's like, well, you know, you have 3 or 4 different beats. I just variate.
How many beats does he know?
He's very trained, you know, jazz, everything.
Oh, okay. So, yeah.
So he's limitless in his drumming abilities. Yeah.
So what's your favorite part about traveling on the road so much?
I mean, honestly, it's all worth it, just a good show. You know, I always say it doesn't matter, you know, how much I make or whatever. I mean, obviously that is important because it's my living, but it can be middle of nowhere, South Dakota, Aberdeen, or is it Abilene? I can't even remember. But if the crowd is, you know, interacting and the energy's there,
mm-hmm.
it's huge. And a lot of times it's like, yeah, you're something, or I'm something very different than what they normally get. And especially when I'm not doing that many covers, so you're doing something different and very, or with original material, when you get a good response of that, it's huge, you know. Because I've played plenty of places where they're like, do you know, they want to make requests. One of many, but yeah. And so that can definitely get slightly annoying, but I know my fair share of covers if I have to pull them out.
What are
some, so the most I do is like 50-50. So.
What are some places you've traveled?
Well, I think I've played in almost 40 states.
Wow.
The only states I haven't been to is Alaska, Hawaii, Maine, and Arizona. But I'm playing Maine next month. So.
I was going to say, don't you live like 60 miles away?
It's 3 hours away.
Oh, okay.
From the border. But yeah. Doing Newcastle, Maine, in end of May.
Hmm. Yeah, I bet you'd find some places down in Arizona, too, easy enough.
Yeah, I just never had much of an urge to go. I like New Mexico, kind of, more. But, you know, I've heard good things about Flagstaff and that whole area. But I don't know why I never ended up down there.
Yeah, Gilbert's. South of Tucson is where the real ultra-liberal area is in Arizona.
And the positive energy, conscious minds. Yeah, and of course, like, yeah, I think it's like right around 40, maybe it's 38. I say 40, but it's easier. But, you know, some places it was like you just played there in between a state one time and haven't been back since. Like, I played Idaho once, you know. So, but, you know, I used to live in California, Colorado, spent a lot of time here in Wisconsin, and now I'm in Vermont, and, yeah.
Do you try and go to certain types of areas, like, say, I don't know, college towns, or do you just kind of go wherever you can?
Yeah, it's like a mixture of kind of both. I definitely will try to target areas that have more of a scene that kind of I can fit into. But, yeah, kind of like what I was just saying. So I've had kind of like 5 home bases. Another one is I have family in Georgia. So I do the whole Appalachian, North Carolina, Tennessee area. And so a lot of tours are kind of based around just going in between these 5 places, mm-hmm. Vermont, Appalachian, Wisconsin, Colorado, California. And some places I just ended up staying or living longer. And yeah, so I definitely have tried to tap into, what do you call it, geo-targeting and kind of right. Figure out where you're. That's a dirty word, is it? Or,
no, big shade is the bad word behind that. But.
Just trying to tap into where your actual fans are, but at the same time, like, I guess I make a living. Like, I've gotten really good at finding places that have their own built-in crowds that can give me a good guarantee, and in some ways, that's great because you're always performing for new people who've never heard you. But in other ways, it's not necessarily people who are always out looking for new original music. Yeah. Or, yeah, and so, like, only a certain, maybe 10 to 20% of my shows are, like, me calling out my fan base to come pay a cover charge or
right.
CD release and have you. So, the majority of them are me.
Trying to introduce yourself.
Yeah, and being that I travel so much, you almost have to, like, start over everywhere you go. And, you know, and it's like, now I can go back to all these places I just mentioned. I have lots of places I can book,
right.
kept in contact with, and develop somewhat fan base.
Yeah.
In Wisconsin's, they might be ahead. You know, this is where I started. So the more I come back here, the more love I get shown. So
yeah, people still walk around with Jacob Greenlighters all over this town. So
gosh, people still talk about like the Grit from literally a decade ago. That's when we were most active,
2008. Yeah.
I'm like, whoa. But, crazy. Hey.
What are these Jacob Green lighters? What is that?
Branded Bic lighters.
Yeah, they have my logo on them. A little my website address underneath. And
do you, like give or sell those out at shows? Or were they at an establishment, like a head shop or something?
No, I got them custom ordered, and I sell them with my merchandise. Cool. I also have koozies and stickers and lighters t-shirts. Or, well, CDs and t-shirts. Saying lighters are like a great promo tool because people accidentally steal them or lose them. They get passed around a lot.
Yeah, virally.
Yeah, literally.
The original viral marketing.
And they do last quite a while, so you could get the butt end of a lighter and get a good week out of it.
Yeah, at least.
Who is this Jacob Green on this lighter?
I'm going to go look at his website.
Hey.
So how much merch do you sell? Is it enough to matter or no?
Yeah, I mean, and that also comes back to you know, like I said, kind of starting over. So, like, when I go back to places such as here in Wisconsin, I usually sell that much more merch. And in Vermont, still kind of building that name up. But, yeah, it's definitely a part of my income. Maybe not the biggest part. But it's worth the investment, for sure.
Oh, okay. That's the key. It's worth the investment.
And it's worth I'm just lost track of thought here. That happens.
Are you
probably good to just put your name out there too?
Yeah.
Are you? How long have you been in Vermont?
Oh well, officially since August, but my wife is from there, and we've been kind of off and on there since 2013, but maybe only like under 2 years total if you add up all the times you stayed there, sort of thing.
Okay, this is of
traveling around time.
This is of interest to me. Are you a craft beer drinker?
Oh, most definitely.
Awesome. You know, I mean, you don't have to say like what places. It sounds like you've traveled a lot too. Coming Colorado, of course. You don't have to say like which one's better. I mean, everywhere has their strengths. But I mean, what are some highlights out there in Vermont for you?
Musically or craft beer wise?
No, craft beer wise. I'm done with music for now. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, they have, of course, a Magic Hat. That's probably the most known. Switchback. That's a really good beer. They I played there recently. And what did they have? It was like a smoky wit or something. Nice. It was delicious.
Yeah.
It was darker, but it didn't taste like a dark beer.
Yeah.
And it had this smoky undertone.
Awesome.
And it was delicious. Switchback Brewery. Playing a little festival there in August in Vermont.
Are breweries a common place while traveling around for you to play?
They have become, in the last couple years, when I tapped into that, it was like a whole nother market. Because, this brewery I'm playing actually this Thursday in Mundelein, Illinois, it's Tighthead Brewery. The owner told me, he said, I can't remember the statistic now, but he said it was something like there's a new brewery popping up, like, every day or something in the United States right now. Like, anywhere.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
And so it's becoming very saturated. Not all of them have music, but a lot of them do. And, yeah, it's a great new way to book shows, and breweries are fun to play, you know.
Have you seen that all over the country or everywhere you've gone?
Yeah. Especially in Colorado, but everything's thriving in Colorado.
Yeah, it's just and, big, so much bigger economically.
Vermont, you know, like most things, it's happening slowly. They like fight to remain underdeveloped, I swear. Yeah, that's what I love about Vermont.
I've never seen a liberal resist change more.
Yeah. And yeah, it's in the South. Yeah, it is everywhere. It's here.
Georgia, I'm sure.
Even, yeah, like Tennessee and even right here in North Illinois, Wisconsin, they are definitely on the rise. So.
You sound like you're, well, I guess more traveled than I am. If you could say that there's one thing about people that makes, that unites Americans, what would you say that is?
It has to be music and the appreciation of artists we all love, or even just songs we all love. I think there's an energy shared. It's not always shared, but when you get a chance to, through music, through live music, or even just listening to music, it's a connection that can be deeper than anything, in some sense, but it can also, you know, collapse all these walls we all put up, I think. Because, you know, I play in all sorts of areas, if you can imagine. And being that I do bluegrassy blues folk stuff, people kind of get the impression that, or make the assumption that I am kind of like hillbilly-ish. And then they talk to me and they're like, no, but they still will appreciate the music. And not that my music is even really, I don't think any of the lyrics are catered towards
any particular ideology.
Besides being free-spirited or
human?
Conscious? Yeah. Humanity?
Conscious, yeah. Conscious bluegrass.
Environmentally conscious as well. Not all material, but...
Right, I assume. You know. I suppose you've seen a lot of differences in how people treat their environment.
This is, kind of interesting. Like, to me, I'm kind of proud of, like, two of my biggest songs on the internet. Well, the most biggest was I got to do the official March Against Monsanto song in 2013. They made it like their official song, and I don't know, like 20,000 plays and lots of free downloads, and I didn't make any money off it, which is fine. And then my second biggest song was a song I put out for Standing Rock. And I made, like, a video for it. And those all were just organically, naturally shared. I didn't have to promote. And to me, that's, like, I'm really proud of that in a way that's, that material
resonated with that many people.
And it's, like, the lyrics are, that's exactly what I wanted to do. But, being that I play all these bar and brewery scenes, that's not necessarily the material I'm playing there.
Yeah, they're not receptive. That audience isn't necessarily receptive. Well,
and so, like, my crowd pleasers is kind of like a whole nother style, which, I mean, I love anyways. I love being diverse as possible, even though it's not always good for your musical career.
Right.
But
people like their niches, and you can really develop a certain kind of style or a toolbox over a certain... But if you try to make yourself too broad, you're not getting that as well.
Well, and so it's almost like people who really like my conscious material on the internet are almost surprised to see me playing some foot stomping dirty blues, and then people see me live playing that, or almost they hear my political stuff or whatever, and they're like, what's going on here? You know?
He's a Democrat.
I'm like, oh, that's my attention.
He's a liberal, not necessarily a Democrat, I suppose.
Have you ever
I'm human.
You're a human.
Have you ever been tempted to, like, push the kind of political stuff more? Or?
I mean,
like,
I
into those crowds.
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Trial and error, and it's not even necessary that all the material I'm playing at live shows isn't conscious.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not like those two specific songs I mentioned are like very specific to the events or the message you're trying to portray. I would say in many ways almost all my material has a conscious message. It's just not as easily understood or somewhat
understated.
Yeah, or just kind of like
more poetic,
discreetly or... in there.
Yeah,
you know, like to me, I know what I'm trying to say,
right? But in some other ones, you're just trying to bury it underneath a nice melody or, you know, some more approachable lyrics.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily look at it as burying. Just kind of like it comes out of me regardless, because that's how I write songs.
Right,
but you know, being I'm trying to make a living out of this, I guess subconsciously I've been influenced by, you know, what's a crowd pleaser and how people react.
Trying to make sure everybody has a good time is just as important as making sure they walk away.
I didn't have intentions to be an entertainer, but I always wanted to be a songwriter.
I don't know, I find this this kind of dichotomy between you know, making kind of more overt conscious music to crowd pleasers. I mean, that all makes sense to me, but kind of mixing that with traveling to different parts of the country. I mean, you know, like, okay, we're a political podcast, right? And I, you know, like, you can't fucking turn on the news without hearing about how divided we are. There's an upcoming civil war. There's, you know, we're more divided and partisan than ever and blah, blah, blah. And, I mean, you know, you're going to Georgia and maybe not playing protest songs, but, you know, still being you.
Propaganda is alive and well on both sides, I believe. But
sure, yeah.
Like I was saying, I think the connection through music, and with, not even that's specifically my music, but that can, like, break down the barriers. And I have, yeah, like, the main reason I always have gone to the South because I have family there. And, you know, I kind of sing, like, almost with a Southern accent. I've always tried to sing soulfully. But, you know, it's not like some straight Southern drawl or what have you. But, yeah, I mean, it does appear we're super divided. But I swear, just like, you put yourself in places where you think you might be very divided and be open and, you know, be proven wrong. Or you can be proven right. You never know.
Yeah, I suppose. You said you were at Standing Rock. How long did you
pre
there?
No, I actually didn't make it. I
almost
had a chance to, because I was traveling across country just at the time. I think I actually didn't have the vehicle to really make it. It was a little... That's the further route from California to here, taking a 90
route
the whole way. Yeah, instead of 80. But... Yeah. So
how did that happen with Stand? Yeah, no, yeah. How did that happen with Standing Rock? Like, why you? I don't mean that. Of
did
course.
They approach you?
Well, how did that happen? It all seemed like it like manifested into something, but actually, this it's hard to explain kind of how the song came to me, but. I feel like I kind of had, like, a vision of something of Standing Rock. And it was one of those songs that was, you know, written within 15 minutes. Like, wow. No effort. Effortless to write. And when that was all happening, I actually just created a video of all this different footage from Standing Rock. And... synced it with my music, and just by sharing it via social media, that's how it began to, you know, go viral in some sense. And then someone who was part of, I guess, the Water Protectors, they asked me to make another video with a song I kind of already had. It's called Open Your Heart. And, oh man, this was...
Wait, wonderful. So they heard your song and then researched you enough to find a different song that you had already done?
No, they were almost asking me if I had a song, because you know, I'm sorry if my history isn't always accurate, but there was like a, I want to say it was in Thailand, they had a protest where everybody meditated, and it, all the soldiers put down their weapons.
Wow.
And essentially, I was asked to make another video to try to manifest that.
Huh.
And I was like, holy pressure.
Yeah, let me knock out a mandala right quick. Hang on.
I mean, but I already had the song. I was like, okay, this... I had to really think about my material. I'm like, okay, this song is kind of what they want. And if you look, that's another video. It wasn't quite as popular, but it's called A Declaration for Standing Rock and Jacob Green, Open Your Heart. And yeah, I mean, that was... I just felt like honored and... but also just, like, very nervous.
Overwhelmed.
Like, okay, this was, what was it, 2016 Thanksgiving. That's when it was all going down. And so it was essentially, like, yeah, they wanted to try to put that out to get people to protest like that. You know, almost similar to the silence protest, but in a more, you know, meditation and trying to manifest something that's, like, a whole other level of getting people to... cooperate and participate.
Yeah, that nonviolent protest.
But also, you know, it's always like a little more, too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But.
It's like an active nonviolence. It's not really part of the American tradition of protest, unfortunately.
Right, and that was when I heard about the other one, I was just like, that's incredible. But can America pull this off?
Well.
November 2016 wasn't our most shining moment.
No. No.
But we don't need to relitigate that.
Too late now.
Oh, wait, we are? Okay, I guess.
Is it relitigating if you never stopped litigating? I don't...
That's a good question.
How many?
Well, I guess this is the first formal suit.
How many mega hats show up at an average show?
Just when I'm asking to come out, or
no? How many mega hats?
Any other gig?
Depends on bar size. You could say anywhere 30 to 80.
How many are sporting the mega hat? Trump's signature red hat.
Oh, I haven't really seen any of those. Wait, are you asking just the whole crowd in general or specific supporters?
How many
No, I actually haven't seen that hat very much, which is...
I've only seen it once in the wild, actually.
Well, you know, what is it, 25% are the only who actually voted for him, and how many people are kind of turning their backs on him at this point? I mean, not as many as you would think, but...
Hey, it's a serious strike at people burning their MAGA hats.
Yeah.
Well, there's about probably 12% of people that are genuine fascists, and the rest are just kind of followers and going along.
The real question is, how many are capitalists? Because capitalism is alive and thriving.
Capitalism and fascism are not necessarily exclusive.
Right, but I would think more fall into the capitalistic consumerism lifestyle as opposed to straight fascism. But straight fascism,
it's hard to know the difference anymore. Well, the problem with that is, like, we're still looking at fascism in, like, that 40s model.
Absolutely.
Like, Hitler had computers, sort of, but he didn't have big data.
Right.
He didn't have, like, the terrorist surveillance program that we already know is a fact of law.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Are you very political? I mean, obviously you spoke of the protest songs. You're conscious. Are you a news hound type of person?
I feel like I kind of go through phases. Sometimes I'll be way too into or aware of the news, and sometimes I just completely live recluse and I'm in Vermont, leave me alone.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, to me, I'm all about living by example.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily believe in the system enough to really favor either side. I almost like believe in, you know, living more like off the land, an Aboriginal style, or even just a farmer style, which obviously the system affects those, but I don't know if I'm really have much faith in a system of all of it, government and parties. Yeah. I don't really believe on relying on the government too much, but maybe I do in some sense, so.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think by nature of your trade, it's, I mean, you know, unless they ban music or something, I mean, it's, you know, yeah, you absolutely. Can be a little more independent and freewheeling and all that. A little off the grid.
Yeah. Ideally, I'd almost rather work to being self-sustainable and off the grid as opposed to, you know, just having more money or...
Yeah.
It's like, for what, you know? Like, I try my best not to be a consumer, but...
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, the modern world is filled with fancy things, too.
Right, you have to have a cell phone if you want to have any kind of popularity or access to the modern world.
Yeah, that's a...
Well...
Whole nother addiction, cell phone addiction.
I mean, it's like you were, you spoke a couple minutes ago about, like putting the Standing Rock song on social media. So, I mean, you obviously,
right?
You know, and you have a website, obviously. You know, and it's like this. It's like you can't avoid that anymore. If you want to, be known. I mean, really?
And that's I was just talking about this friend. Like, I kind of hate the fact that it's standard or a necessity to be so involved in social media just to have some type of following. And, you know, things like this, a podcast, I mean, obviously you guys, you know, share it on your social media to try to get it exposed. But, like, if you essentially could get enough listeners, I would think eventually you could even almost stop
promoting it or
promoting and just be like, because isn't that kind of more of the goal? Because you want to exist in your own realm that's not attached to these
material concerns. Yeah.
I think when we started this, Charles said, when we started this, Charles said we should create our own bubble. You know?
Like, yeah.
Like, speaking of the political bubbles that they all talk about.
Well, that's what essentially I think it's almost the same. I would think most musicians, you know, they almost, like, you want to get to a point where you have enough following so, like, you don't have to try so hard to fit into this mold of what the music industry is or just any industry, really, you know, it's like...
Or that urge to find the crowd-pleasing song that you mentioned earlier.
Right. But it's like, how long or how much do you have to do it to get to that point? I don't know. Will I ever get to that point? Who knows? I still get to do what I love, and, I've worked plenty of other jobs I couldn't stand, so...
Well, on a slightly related note, what kind of albums do you have you released? Is it more conscious or your pleasing songs?
I would say they're definitely a mixture. I kind of put out, like... Well, looking back, it's almost like I felt like I put out too much material in a short amount of time because I was all about just kind of living in the moment. But, I have a full album that was all revolves around the March Against Monsanto movement, and another album, Harvest Time, that's more about, like, farmers' rights. Well, also related, but it also is just about, you know, off-grid living and the importance of nature and being self-sustainable. And I try to almost... put out material or albums in themes. So there is an album that's primarily blues based, and yes, you could say the lyrics aren't as conscious, but it's not like My Woman Left Me Blues and, like, you know, your standard.
Right.
It still has that little twist that's like, okay, this is something different, not just straight
And what you think of the it. World? Is that ennui? Not exactly.
Wait, what did you say?
Oh, blues. It's not that typical ennui that blues has.
Yeah. I mean, maybe occasionally that exists, but... I mean, all I really do is I write experience. I don't force or necessarily even try to write songs. I let them come to me, and sometimes they can. I think the longest has taken almost 8 years to finish a song. It's just because I just never got back to it. You know, it just sat on the shelf, and it almost came back when it was relevant again.
And you're talking more about like the lyrics.
As a whole, you know, like sometimes the melody comes before anything.
I mean, in terms of not being able to finish, like that, like the song you just brought up, was that like you just didn't know how to lyrically finish it?
No, that was actually. So I started writing it in 2008, finished it in 2016, and 2008 I just didn't have the ability or skills yet to pick out the melody I was singing, When I finally got it, you know, this is years later, just hopefully better at guitar, I was able to find all those notes within that melody, and then, because I had, like, literally the whole first verse and the chorus for 7 years or something, and on the eighth year, I finished, like, two verses and picked out that melody, and the music, it came together, and when that happened... I think when I finally went back to it, it came together, like, really quick.
Yeah, that's how it was supposed to be.
And some songs, you know, like the Standing Rock song, that's called Leave My Soul Behind. That literally 20 minutes to write, and it was... So many visions were in my head of, you know, just what the lyrics are kind of painting the picture of. So, can go either way.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's a natural process.
Have you ever performed at any like
protest?
Yeah, or just a benefit type show?
Like, absolutely.
Yeah. What are some groups?
For groups?
Yeah, like what are some of the ones you've done?
Well, I've done a March Against Monsanto's protest at Tennessee, 2013. And they also had a second one in 2013. I did in Duluth. 2014 was San Francisco. That was by far the biggest, one of my favorites. 2015 was Santa Rosa, California. And
nice town.
2016 was Denver, and that was also a big one. But I was going to... I have this thing on my website. It's called Musical Highlights, because that's how great my memory is right now. Because I actually have more protest things I've done. You'd have to get to it on there.
Related to the record question, have you ever been approached for a record deal, just out of curiosity?
No. I've been more approached by booking agents. Actually, A&R rep one time, but... you know, honestly, in this day and age, there's more almost like imposters or just more companies that want you to invest in first with no guarantee of how it's going to get returned. And, you know, the new way, well, independent musicians, record labels are looking for how much you can do on your own now, as opposed to trying to discover someone.
Right.
They're literally like... looking at how many likes you have, looking at how many views you have, and if you can practically, like, you know, be an independent label on your own, that's
who they're going to invest
in. Who they're looking into the most. Because CDs aren't selling like they used to, and record labels, you know, a lot of the big ones, the kind of cutthroat attitude, you know, they're really not going to...
Yeah, they don't have to invest in a new artist that way.
Yeah. And I've heard there's... a lot of people get signed, and their stuff never gets released. Yeah. Like, they're literally just label, got a contract, recorded it all, but...
just buried it?
Just didn't fit what they were trying to fit them into, you know? Pop music.
Pop music.
But I don't... there's some really cool record labels that have a lot of conscious artists, which I would love to get the attention of them. But in some sense, I feel like if you work hard enough, in this day and age, it's almost somewhat more accessible to survive and thrive as an independent musician. You know.
Right, because there's no really centralized distribution or, like, certain media source that you have to get known to become famous.
And like I was saying earlier, kind of with geo-targeting or whatever, you can just really tap into, you know, if you know a lot of artists who are similar to your material, you can tap into their fan base now.
See where they play.
Or even just, like, with trying to promote to certain fans, you know, that's...
Hmm.
Almost that much easier with social media. Not that it's always...
Have you ever thought about using, like, voting data or anything like that?
You mean... Oh, no. That's a good way. That's a good idea to tap into.
You know, go hyper-geo-targeting. Well, I guess it depends on what kind of mixture you've... Well, you can go back and see where you've been successful, look at those demographics, and then kind of look at some places with similar demographics that you haven't been to before.
Absolutely. And, well, a lot of times I do it, like I said, just trying to be diverse, that I'll do it, like, specifically per song. I'm just promoting a specific song. Like, I'll know enough music that, or artists that sound, have that similar sound to the song I'm trying to promote, whether it's the message or the music, and just try to appeal to those listeners, you know, and that, and with the diverseness of my material, that can be a random list of people or just from all walks of life or...
Yeah, what regional culture are you trying to tap into?
All of them. One by one. But, yeah, I mean, I say, like, what I'm doing now, I could do this the rest of my life, and, you know, maybe I'm kind of, like, lower class, but I still do what I love, and I can pay my bills and make a living. That's essentially, I'm always trying to get my music more heard, but there's a lot of trial and error, and it's a learning process, and I would like to think that I'm always improving at everything I do, so... You know, you might have heard me 10 years ago and weren't too impressed, and, you know, come see me today. We'll see.
It's just a shame you can't play the bop anymore.
Oh, the bop. That was my spot.
So do you live in a kind of rural area in Vermont? Or is it all rural?
Yeah, It is very rural. Their biggest city, Burlington, I believe it's around... only 50 or 60,000
wow.
population. And that area, that's northwest, and that just kind of revolves around, because it's by this huge lake, and it's also by the Canadian border.
Mm-hmm.
And the only other really populated, or more populated is in Vermont, is in the southern region, and that's very close to Massachusetts, and New Hampshire's similar, the southern spot. Is more populated, but I live way up north. I'm 12 miles from the Canadian border on the northeast side, so I'm like maybe, you know, 15 minutes from Canada, maybe half hour to New Hampshire.
Wow.
But I live near a border town, Newport, that's, I don't know, it's about 10,000-15,000 people, but where I actually live is very rural and country-like, and we got a nice garden.
So
mountainous.
So you've done these March Against Monsanto, and obviously you live in a rural area, and this may be a
musical highlights, I should say.
Sorry, this may be kind of a dumb question, but are farmers politically active about that?
Coming to the protests?
Well, like the Monsanto. I mean, I know that. Yeah, farmers don't like it, but are they, like, do they go to those protests? Do they...
I feel like it's probably more of your everyday consumers or grocery shoppers. You know, because they said within a couple years of the first march against Monsanto, 2013, non-GMO and organic sales went up, like, 30%.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously... other your typical pesticide GMO products went down. And so I think a lot of those, that protest specifically, is definitely more of people just trying in their everyday life and what they purchase. You know, your dollar is your vote, right?
Yeah. So kind of like the other side of the equation.
Because I feel like a lot of farmers who are on that scale of being pressured to use GMOs or even almost forced, they don't have a whole lot of options. Yeah. Unless they want to completely lose their farm and their income, you know? It's really sad.
Yeah, it's a tough situation.
And that's a whole other level, like corporate farming, I guess you want to call it.
Yeah,
you get way too much corn, obviously.
Yeah, it's totally monocultured and crush way too much of it.
Well, and even...
And they even go ahead. Say the organic crops are contaminated.
Well, because, I mean, and even switching over to being an organic farmer, if you're not, I'm sure you'd have, you know, it's such an investment.
Oh, so I've also done a ton of farmers markets. That was my bread and butter when I was in California, because there's so many.
Interesting.
And I've talked to a lot of farmers, and yeah, one guy said it was like an extra $10,000 just to have the certification to be organic, and he obviously already grew organic, but he couldn't literally put the sign up, which would potentially get his sales.
Yeah.
He can increase his sales and, so, you know, have a higher cost, but, you know,
yeah, I've,
he
I've
didn't
heard
want
that
pay
before.
That.
And yeah,
I just had to essentially, you have to talk to him, you know, like anything, talk to your neighbors, talk to your farmers.
Wait, is that through a private company he had to get that certification through?
No, just any. If you have your own booth, you know, you're a farmer at the market, if you want to put that you're organically certified, it's a huge find. And then people who grow with pesticides and GMOs, they don't have to certify anything.
Nope.
Isn't that the irony of it? Like,
yeah, it's
pump it up with a bunch of junk and sell it and don't even tell people you pump it with junk. And
yeah,
then
this should, like, all the stuff in the produce market should have, like, you know, powered by Roundup.
Yeah. Well, would you think that'd be obvious, but more people are oblivious to that fact, even what Roundup is.
And just the fact that it's to many consumers in, you know, America or the world, they can't afford to eat, you know, the organic or whatever kind of
Aldi's, man.
Produce.
The healthy version.
Aldi's is where it's at. That is the cheapest organic.
Really?
You can get. Absolutely. They have their own brand.
Well, yeah, because they're the other half of Trader Joe's, right?
Well, it's like the brother or something? Or
yeah, well, they are owned by the same company.
Oh, they are?
That's why a lot of the stuff that you buy in Aldi's is the same stuff you get at Trader Joe's.
Or, like I was saying, the farmer's market is even, you know, because most of them do just grow organically anyways. They're a small farm, and they are not always cheaper than the grocery store, but you can barter. Come on.
Yeah,
right. Argue him down.
But I mean, you know, I mean, even that
quality's always there.
You know, not everyone has, you know, access to that, even if they want to. Like, you know, if you're in the middle of some, you know, huge city, you know, you really have to kind of search for it. And it just
urban farming's popping up too.
It's growing. Like I know, like in Detroit. They had, you know, all these houses foreclosed and run down and condemned, and there are people in Detroit that are just farming in the middle of the city. They just turn it into farmland. It's also a source of jobs.
Milwaukee's got a great urban farming scene.
Yeah, Milwaukee is getting huge.
What's
into
the big one? Growing Power.
Yeah. About from the guy who was he, like a policy guy in D.C. with an agricultural degree who came back to Milwaukee?
Yep.
That's awesome.
There's they had Sweetwater Organics at one point. That was what do you call it? The where the fish live underneath the plants. Aquaponics.
Yeah,
aquaponics. That was it, aquaponics.
Right. That's a huge system.
Wait. But
what is aquaponics?
You know,
fish live I've never even heard of this.
It's It's like you make these tanks where you can grow tomatoes in like your like the growing layer, and it's all water underneath with like salmon or like certain types of fish that can like basically eat the refuse of the plants, and what they produce is fertilizer for the plants.
Wild. Yep.
They feed each other. It's just completely sustainable.
Perfectly sustainable microecology.
But you know, okay, so you're saying like, yeah, it is harder for people to afford, but here's a kind of disturbing fact. Whole Foods, a lot of their organic produce, you know where it comes from?
Mm-hmm.
Privatized prisons. Privatized you know how cheap prisons? They probably get that?
Holy cow.
And then they... Capitalism is alive and well.
Wait.
Holy cow, that's literally slave labor.
They...
Yeah, dude.
There's prisons that farm?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
yeah, like just like
making
prisons.
License plate or anything they can...
Yeah, they work those people for like a quarter an hour.
And it, maybe they get to eat some of that organic food, but I actually...
Usually not. I can't imagine they would keep it. It's more valuable to sell.
I actually had a friend, she lives in Milwaukee, and she was part of a program that, you know, worked with prisoners and helped make the gardens. And
wow.
I mean, I guess in a sense, it's good, and we all should be kind of getting our hands in the dirt, but... It's to sell it, or to turn it around and profit off of it more right? with privatized prisons?
Yeah, especially from a private prison. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's just what I've heard about Whole Foods. Who's to say
the other places.
Anywhere else? I mean, you trust Walmart? Yeah. They got organic now.
Well, the one thing about farmers markets, I'll say in their defense, the reason it's slightly, you can bear the economic cost more of it being slightly more expensive is it has a longer shelf life. Like, if you go to a grocery store, that stuff has been out of the ground for, like, weeks, maybe.
Absolutely. So,
like, that person you're buying it from may have just picked it the other day.
And it's, like, straight farmer to consumer, you know? It's how much like, more
direct. Efficient economically. Yeah. Like, it doesn't... The more middleman something goes through, the more... Well, the worse it gets economically.
When it's, like, when a farmer hands you the vegetables he grew, it's, like... There's energy you can feel from the love and care he's put into those vegetables. And you'll taste it when you cook them.
It's like, right? It's like live music.
Every time it hits a distributor's hands.
Absolutely.
Just like live music.
Yeah. How's your carbon footprint?
The gas in the van, I guess.
That's interesting. My wife and I looked up one year. It was like two of our years we traveled the most in. Being that we traveled together, someone living in an apartment actually used more oil than us.
Really?
Yeah, our carbon footprint was smaller than your average person who pays, utility bills. Yeah.
It's so, like, yeah, because I know our energy here is like from the coal-powered planes on the Rock River there.
And I think we drove 60,000 miles a year. Holy average cow. Person does like 15 to 20 a year.
Yeah.
So.
At most, yeah, that's like the most. Oh. Crazy.
Right? I was surprised.
So apparently people pull up your stakes. It's time to hit the road. Let's go. Let's get
your solar
runway.
Panels or something.
Just everyone's
we'll
nomadic
all put solar
now.
Panels in our electric cars.
There's supposed to be this new solar company that they'll install panels for free and that you just pay them the bill instead and it's cheaper than your regular.
Yeah, I've heard there's a lot.
Go, I think Go Solar or something.
Okay, like some of those companies are scams. I've heard.
Oh, really? Well, that's, you're just paying them. It's like fake solar. Or something.
Well, it's not that you pay. It's like they really overcharge, and then they put these onerous like legal contracts in, so you can't really wiggle out of it, and they'll call. And the interest rates, are nuts.
Got to be aware.
So you got to be careful with those kind of things.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah. But I on the wandering part, you will be forced to have less, I'm sure, because your carbon footprint is the stuff you own, too, and forced to live out of a van, as you say, for, like, months out of the year. You don't really have very many possessions that you're forced to you can drag with you.
Right, and we had an RV at one point. That didn't work out too well, but... Minivans I've gone through.
Minivan is a stable.
It was always by choice, though. I was...
Yeah, I've always loved owning a minivan. How else are you going to take your seven best friends out to something?
Right. Party in a van.
Right, party in the van.
Jacob, do you want to tell any listeners about
your social media?
Yeah, your website.
Oh, gee willigers. but it can all be connected through jacobgreenmusic.com.
There you go.
Obviously, probably the most active is facebook.com/jacobgreenmusic, instagram.com/jacobgreenmusic. I'm occasionally on Twitter. That's also jacobgreenmusic. And, my SoundCloud. If you find me on SoundCloud, that has a lot of my material, or most recent material. And all my albums and stuff I put out is available on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon.
Oh, cool.
Google Play.
Google Play, yeah. And Bandcamp, too. That's a good one.
Yeah, to those listening, those can koozies, I saw those. Pretty awesome looking.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome looking. Always useful, portable, stylish.
Also great for hot beverages, tea.
I've never thought about that. On a cold day, putting a little thing of tea in, yeah.
Well, it's like we drink a lot of out of mason jars, so perfect for that. You got your hot glass. And
so your can koozie would fit a mason jar. That's good to know.
Yeah, you might have to stretch it a little, but they're flexible. Mm-hmm. Probably not the best material they're made out of, but,
They still fit around anything.
Yeah.
We should talk about the news a little bit, right?
Okay.
Like Netanyahu's announcement last week. We got to talk about that.
We should get Charles's,
update me. I'm out of
How does this fit into...
Jacob, you feel free to add in your 2 cents about this. Okay. But the other night, Netanyahu went in front of a live TV screen and put this presentation on, the highlight of which was him standing behind a giant screen with Iran Light on it. He is trying to get everyone that he can to pull out of that 2015 JCPOA deal, whereby Iran basically froze its nuclear program and we agreed not to invade or attack them. In the last couple of weeks, there have been some significant Israeli escalations. They've been hitting Iranian military assets in Syria with, airstrikes, up to a couple of days ago. This is a worrying situation.
I think it's important to be clear, as far as I understand, the intel that he was talking about is old?
Yes, this is from a 1999 to 2003 program, allegedly, which they already declared, and when they came to the table to discuss this deal.
I mean, isn't it... So, it's being sold by Netanyahu and, the White House as well, as reasons why the deal should be torn up, but isn't it really why the deal was done in the first place? There wouldn't be a deal without that type of information, because there wouldn't have been a need to do it.
Yeah, it's not a smoking gun that Netanyahu would, seem to suggest. But, I guess the gun was smoking at one point. they found the gun, and they checked the fingerprints on it, and we moved on and signed this deal. But... This is building up.
It's madness.
Just pure madness, man. Why would anybody want war?
Well,
there's too many people to profit off.
Yeah.
The warmongers.
Why? Let's answer that question though specifically for Netanyahu. I mean, is it just a profiteering thing? Okay. I mean, I imagine there's a geopolitical intent on his part, whether or not he's going about it the right way, I think, is probably... He's probably not, but... What they're just trying
This is the same script that he's been reading off of for 20 years, but this also has a domestic component, because if this guy stopped talking about who he wants to go to war with next, people would be forced to stop and look at what he's done, and like, what, the 3 or 4 corruption investigations now that the police are looking at him for? Like, this is wagging the dog.
Yeah.
In a very real and dangerous way. And, like, the worst part is that on our... Well, I guess on our side, technically, because we are Americans, like it or not. We have people who have an incentive to wag the dog. You've got Netanyahu, the guy who's under corruption. You've got Trump, who is also under scandal. And the other key player, Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, who, again, if he weren't on the warpath... people would be forced to look at what he is doing and isn't doing.
All a big distraction.
What, for those who aren't totally up to date, what would MBS be kind of distracting from?
Well, he had the anti-corruption drive where he rounded up hundreds of people and put them in the Ritz-Carlton Riyadh and allegedly tortured them, some of them himself. He's trying to remake the entire economy right now with this Saudi 2030 program. He wants to literally create like a ecologically sustainable, like hyper-tech city in the desert, and you know help try to push the Saudi economy out of oil.
I would even say when there's almost any time there's the almost seems obvious that there is a distraction. There's probably so much more you don't know what they're trying to distract you from. You know what I mean?
What else was behind that corruption drive whereby he was literally torturing his cousins again? I know.
It's a very thick smokescreen.
Very, very thick. But yeah, it's a lot of it seems to be corruption.
Yeah.
Is...
Like, not even, like, complex corruption. Just,
is there any reason to believe MBS is... unpopular in Saudi Arabia?
No. He's... Well, the thing is, domestically over there, he's, like, opening up the country to reforms that probably should have happened, like, a century ago, so... I imagine he does have some degree of domestic support. Like, hey, we can go watch a Black Panther, finally.
Yeah.
Without having to steal it off the internet.
I mean, but he's kind of walking a fine line here. Where, I mean, he's kind of going all in.
Because if there were any kind of like sanctions or reaction to what they're doing in Yemen, for instance, then and if the Saudi Arabian people felt that, then the mathematics changes, obviously.
And in general, it's a country that's not taking in, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot in GDP. But they are obviously spending a lot on, you know, the war in Yemen. Who knows what's going to happen with Iran? And then these big, you know, economic plans he has that does have an initial investment. And if they had any sort of problems there, the economic strain might be felt by people more.
Sure. Yeah, like... The economy would be strained. For instance, if all of a sudden there was a hot war in the Persian Gulf, they import food, so... And that's, you know, the populist east side of it would feel that almost immediately. But yeah, that's the money that they're going to raise is like they're putting up, what, 5% of the Saudi National Oil Company on a stock exchange? That's part of the reason MBS was in the country a few weeks ago to smooth that all out.
Oh, he's trying to get investors? Like Peter Thiel and shit?
Because, you know, he went around to all the blue... Yeah, Peter Thiel, Bill Gates. He talked to all those CEOs and like, hey, I'm going to be on the burst or the stock exchange with you guys. And they seemed to be okay with it.
Wow.
They were too busy demonstrating the Oculus Rift to him to notice that he was committing war crimes. Like, oh, hang on a second. I'm getting a notification on my phone about some airstrike. Oh, no, that's fine. Hey, what's this button do?
Wow.
Anything else in the news we want to talk about? I don't think any more hot air needs to be spent on it, but, you know, the White House establishment is really like, or not, sorry, the D.C. establishment really seems to be,
really got their, yeah, they got their skirts in a twist, so to speak.
Collapsing, sorry, collapsing upon their own ego. Yeah, they're,
right.
They're
just the image that the guy was like in a limo going to a NBC or so, like a media sponsored post
NBC party, MSNBC after party.
And it was like it was like he was complaining about how he wasn't going to he didn't want to be bullied by the elites.
And Charles is talking about Matt Schlapp, who is the who runs the CPAC, which is a somewhat influential conservative group. They have an annual conference.
One of the PACs.
Trump speaks at it. They're, traditionally, they're a little bit more like young and libertarian, but they've turned into a big Trump-stroking fest recently. And his wife works, I believe, in the White House or somehow for the administration. And, you know, yeah, they were they are the embodiment of at least a conservative DC establishment, and not just and I don't just
yeah,
mean
he
like
was
powerful
former VP for
go ahead.
Right, he was a former VP for government relations for Koch Industries.
Yeah, well, it's not just that they're conservative like politician types, but they are very much DC establishment conservative types. And they're sitting here talking about, like, they're trying to say Michelle Wolf is, like, the establishment laughing at the normal people as they're tweeting that out from a limo going to an MSNBC after party for the White House Correspondents Association that they were invited to, even though neither of them are White House correspondents because they're part of the establishment.
The establishment.
Who make this
stuff
up?
It is, no, I mean that is like if you were making like a political satire of the day, that would be a scene you'd put in it.
Right.
Like as they're like
you can't make this stuff up, people.
Sipping on like $1,000 bottle of champagne like and caviar and tweeting on their you know.
The nerve of them making us feel uncomfortable.
Oh, I cannot believe that.
How dare thou?
Next thing you know, they'll come back for their welfare that we stole from them. Sorry, that was a little off color.
Hey, I mean, did you listen? Yeah, was, did you listen to her routine, Michelle Wolf?
No, I didn't. I saw a couple of minutes of it, but just the highlights that everybody was listening to. What did you think of it?
Oh, I would have been cackling so loud. I actually, my partner read through it. Like, as soon as we heard about it, she just looked up the transcript and was reading it. And, like, we were laughing as she's, like, telling me joke after. And then I'm like, I still watched it again, and I laughed. I think it's super funny. And it's just, I mean, this has been done before. I mean, Stephen Colbert, you know, he said some stuff with W on stage. Yeah, I mean,
he was way more cutting to W's face.
Yeah, I think the logic. Oh no, there is no logic. Never mind. I was going to try and explain the logic of the other side, but
one,
the overreaction of the other side is. I mean, they're trying to turn this into a bullying thing. See, the fucking conservatives, they're trying to use liberal logic against liberals. But they're always hypocrites, of course, when they do that.
Right. You know what they say about the bullies, right? They're the most sensitive.
Well,
that's why they do.
Yeah, I think this is a great example of that. A bully not being able to take someone, you know, standing
they dish
up.
Out.
Yeah, it's like they tell you when you're a kid, like, mm-hmm. The best way to handle a bully is to stand up to them. So someone stood up to this bully. In this case, it's the White House press secretary. And, yeah.
Of course.
She gets all...
The one who, like, tells, like, lambasts reporters to their faces almost every day she's in front of them. Tells them about how terrible they are and the job they do is terrible.
And defends the president's sexist bullying. over and over.
So much irony going on here.
My head twists with irony.
It's like, there is a, well, you know, they're always saying about the fake news, and there is a lot of fake news, but even the real news, there's so much
misleading statements.
Yeah, it's just...
I mean, it's, yeah, and it's framed certain ways to keep you from asking questions. Like, the most recent thing I can point to is that lawyer in New York a few weeks ago who self-immolated himself.
Yeah.
Which, you know, by itself was huge news because he was a well-respected lawyer, but nobody was mentioning why. Right. And it's like, it took me a bit of digging to find out it was basically an environmental protest. He immolated like a Tibetan monk because we are raping the planet brown.
And that would never have
been associated with controversial. So the political statement that he was trying to make got buried in condolences.
I think
it's also like just meant to keep us more confused, I guess. Yeah. And divided.
Yeah.
Charles, I think your point is correct, though I'd push back a little bit. I don't think it was big news. Like, it got reported, by, you know, the normal outlets, but like
I guess it was
our naked emperor said something that day on social media and it just got almost no air.
And then people had to admire his Johnson again. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he wishes.
No, Stormy Daniels' picture is going to leak before this is all said and done. I think that's the, like, you know, like one of those things that's bound to happen by fate, and until that happens, nothing else can progress. Like, the country needs to see Donald Trump's naked dick pics before we can move past this.
That would be, like, the perfect end to this surreal fantasy we're living in.
Oh, jeez, that is surreal.
Like, right, it would collapse it into a very visceral reality that you can't ignore.
The fire, the forest has to burn for it to grow again.
Right?
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, social media, the internet, porn, you know, it's all kind of factored into this. And that would be like hopefully it's the end, but that would be a fitting end towards the last, like, what it's been about 20 years of fucked up politics since essentially the Monica Lewinsky scandal.
Yeah.
Like, I'd say politics has been
a good bookend for it.
It's not just Trump. Trump is just like, you remember in The Wire how, like, Marlo wasn't a character in the beginning, but he really was, like, kind of like, if you looked at the whole arc, kind of the big bad, sort of. I mean, he was the main bad. He was the unbeatable bad guy.
Yeah, the unbeatable bad guy.
And
the Thanos, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Trump is just the Thanos, the Marlo. Oh, hopefully not unbeatable, of course. But I think he's just, like, the last. Like, it's all been building since, yeah, I'd say since fucking come on a blue dress.
Since Gingrich. Thanks, Newt Gingrich. Yeah. The Republican revolution in the 90s gave us this. Trump is its logical outcome. Yeah.
Yeah, and so...
That sounds about right.
And so, yeah, I mean, and maybe it will just be we all have to see the president's overhyped penis.
For this all to
look what he subjected all of those beautiful porn stars to,
and then we'll.
But essentially, it seems like we could get there, and then it'd be like, is it the end or?
It's gotta be now, right, and we can laugh at it. That means we're no longer afraid.
Yeah, it'll break the spell. We'll all look introspectively at that point and be like, what have we come to? Because even they'll have
to.
What
the hell was I on?
You know, because, like, Sarah Sanders will be pressured to, like, somehow say it's not small, like, on national TV. And everyone will be
it's
like, what is happening? Yeah.
That's going to be photoshopped and altered. And, we'll get
see,
the official, chopped. Official.
It couldn't possibly be wrinkled in reality. The president's penis is large and smooth. I caress it. Yeah, that's what has to happen.
And
then
Fox News will be
talking. So State Mutual Bank.
MSNBC, and it'll all just collapse.
Yeah, it seems like a good point to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so this has been another episode.
All right, well, this has been Tell Me What to Think. What to think.
You can email the pod at tmwttpod@gmail.com. Hit me up on Twitter at bloatednemesis, Charles at green_weird, which is WYRD. Thank you, Jacob, for being on our podcast. It's been a good time.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, guys. I'm going to tune in more frequently.
Awesome. Thank you.
Feel free to come back whenever.
Awesome.
Yeah, next time you're around. All right. Everyone have a great week.